Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We get a good one today. Later on, Chris Haynes joins to talk about some of the news around the NBA. But first, we have Amin El-Hassan talking about the NBA Cup with the Spurs and Knicks facing off on Tuesday. We talk about those games on Saturday. That's coming up right now. All right, to discuss the NBA Cup semifinals, joining me today is Amin El-Hassan. Amin, how are you?
I'm good, man. I love Vegas. It's funny. There's like my body has a muscle memory of Summer League, but it's not quite Summer League, but it has Summer League vibes a little bit because of the multiple teams and because of the media collection here. So it's good. I like being in Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas is it's like a great host city. Yeah, I always enjoy coming Summer League. It was my second cup.
Can I say, don't want an NBA team?
You don't, well, how come? Why is that?
I think what I like about Vegas is it's not an NBA city, but we get to come here for special occasions. And if you put a team here, and there's a lot of economic reasons why I think a team won't be here, but if you put a team here, it kind of takes away the specialness of we came for Summer League and then we came for NBA Cup. You know, and then if you're coming here like in February, like, all right, now what are we doing?
I do think it'll be very interesting. The NBA seems to be continually kicking the can down the road when it comes to expansion. So for now, we're going to continue just being happy with these events. And the NBA Cup next year, it won't be the semifinals. It'll just be the final.
A little sad about that.
I'm a little disappointed about that as well, because I thought it was a great crowd, especially for the second game. Spurs, Thunder, we saw the Spurs win that game 111-109. Upset OKC, who fell to 24-2 on the year. Woohoo, boohoo. So sad there. But for the Spurs, they get Victor Wembanyama back. Comes off the bench in the game, plus 21 in 21 minutes. They were at minus 19 in 27 minutes without him. He finished with 22 points, 9 boards, 2 blocks, plus 21 in 21 minutes, as I said. Immediate difference maker, Amin. Right. I mean, it was obvious as soon as he went on the floor.
So if you've been watching Oklahoma City Thunder games this season, there's an inflection point every game where it's like, okay, you know, they're winning, but we're still in this game. And then they hit you in the face, and all of a sudden they're up 11, and 11 turns into 21 very quickly. And last night, it looked like it was going that way, because remember, Wembanyama doesn't start the game. He checks in, and instantly, the lead shrinks. He sits down, it balloons again, it gets up to, I think, 15 or 16 points. He comes back in, it shrinks again. And at halftime, Victor Wembanyama had played 7 minutes, and was plus 20 in those 7 minutes. It was the most incredible, immediate, unquestioned impact I think I've seen in quite a while watching NBA basketball. Because whenever you look at raw plus minus, there's a lot of noise in there. Who was on the floor?
Small sample.
Yeah. This was undeniable. He got on the floor, and the Thunder changed how they play basketball. They played scared. They didn't want any parts of going at him. And then offensively, he didn't have to do much, but he just drew so much attention. It made life so much easier for his teammates.
I mean, immediately, the first two plays, he grabbed those two offensive boards. Yep. He scored on one of them, and he kicked it out to Castle for the three on the other one. Or maybe it was Harper. But I think like immediately on that end of the floor, and then defensively as well, I looked at, pulled up the numbers, the on-off with Wemby on the floor versus off the floor. The Spurs had an 83.3 defensive rating with Wemby on the floor, a 113.1 defensive rating when he was off. The shot distribution is where the biggest difference was felt. The Thunder took only 10% of their shots at the rim when Wemby was on the floor to 29% when he was off the floor. So just completely evaporated their at-rim attempts, which is in part why their offense is so stellar. And that's because of just Victor's presence being near the rim.
It's one of those things where it was so stark, I would be surprised if the numbers were anything else. I have not seen Shai Gilgeous-Alexander drive to the basket and say, never mind. I saw that last night with Victor Wembanyama on the floor. And I'll be honest with you, Kevin. I think we talked about this right before the season started. You said he's going to be a top five player. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of great players, pump the brakes. I've always been very respectful of his potential and his talent. I love his attitude and his approach. But I'm also kind of like, look, it takes time. There are a lot of great players in this league. And last night was the first time I sat there and I said, holy shit, I could see him being the best player in the NBA this year, and I can see him being the best player ever within a reasonable horizon of time. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying the possibility went from, yeah, let's see, to, oh, it could happen.
I mean, it definitely could happen. I mean, he obviously you need like a lot of like good fortune on your side.
And
you
health.
Need, you need health and, yeah. and that's like the biggest thing with him. I mean, he's had a ton of weird, crazy injuries throughout his entire life. When he was 16, he had a stress fracture in his hip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a long, extensive history of injury. But you like, you know, you pray to the basketball gods that Wemby can stay healthy over time because he definitely has that potential path for him in his future because it's not just defensively with how he changes the floor. I mean, basically like, OKC last year, they turned into a jump shooting team against Denver zone.
Mm-hmm.
Wemby alone on the floor turned them into a jump shooting team. Like half their shots came from three. They didn't shoot well. Defensively, we know he's already one of the best players we've ever seen on that end of the floor. Offensively, this guy is still not what he will be in his prime.
Scratching the surface, honestly. And this is going to sound real like touchy-feely or whatever, but I think one of the things I like the most about him is his feels like a very earnest approach to the game. We're so used to our star players, especially now, being a little jaded or a little too cool for school. You know, thinking about Jokic a couple of years ago, being like, oh, we have to do a parade too. Like, and I feel,
or even Giannis not celebrating the cup win last year. They didn't celebrate.
It's trickled kind of throughout basketball. Like, this is how you're supposed to carry yourself. And I love how just refreshingly honest he is about last night after that win. He says, they've only lost one time. Of course, this is a big win for us. Like, it's beyond the NBA Cup. It's just the idea of, hey, yeah, this was a big game. And we will cherish this victory. Whereas most of the time, I think the conventional wisdom says, you say something like, well, it's just another game on the schedule. They're a great team. And we have to, our focus now is on the, like, you do all that talk. He said, no. We're going to cherish this.
And on to Cincinnati Belichick style.
Yeah, exactly. So his positive energy in that way, I hope it becomes infectious. I hope other players follow his lead because, man, like this thing is supposed to be fun. And I think that's the great part about last night. It was a fun night. Both games were fun. But that Oklahoma City Thunder Spurs game was so fun. You could feel everyone wanting that. It wasn't like, oh, if we win, it'll be cool. These guys wanted to win, and you could tell that the Spurs were incredibly happy and the Thunder were incredibly pissed at the end of that game.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I think in regards to Wemby, I was sitting in front of a row in front of like two or three kids with their dad, I think. And it was like just the energy that there seems to be in that crowd, especially from the young people. There's a lot of families in the crowd, it seemed like, for that second game and the first game too. But they're like this style of basketball that he brings, Wemby, as soon as he ripped off the warm-up uniform, you heard the crowd like he's actually playing because he didn't play the whole first quarter.
Right.
And
so I was sitting behind the Spurs bench, like maybe a couple rows behind the Spurs bench. I was watching the warm-ups he did during the first quarter. First of all, he does like this Tai Chi.
Yeah, I saw
like,
that.
And I'm looking at it. It's kind of like almost halfway up the tunnel, like off to the side.
I got a good video of that.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if the broadcast showed any of the stuff he was doing. So I'm looking at him like, so the monk thing is real. This wasn't just a PR stunt. Then he's got this thing where him and Bismack Biyombo basically just bump into each other. And I'm not talking about like a celebratory chest bump. Like they mimic banging in the post. Just like two Rams just crashing into each other. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then he walks over to the, like that was the last kind of green light before he walked up into the scorer's table to check in.
I mean, it was instant impact. All that warming up worked out, obviously, for him. I mean, OKC changed the way they play, as we talked about. And I also think about the other takeaway from this game is the first time all year we've seen the Spurs fully healthy.
Yep.
All three of their guards with Victor Wembanyama. And those guys continue to look good. Their three-guard lineup. Every lineup is in the pluses for net rating, whether it's Fox only, Castle only, Harper only, or Fox plus Castle, Castle plus Harper, Fox plus Harper. We have not seen the Spurs use all three of them together.
Right.
But two of them or one of them on the floor basically all the time this season. I was skeptical about this configuration with these three guards working entering the season. So far, you know, we're only in mid-December at this point. The playoffs are a whole other conversation when it comes to that. But so far, it seems to be working at a really high level. What are you seeing from those three-guard lineups, or rather the three-guard rotation the Spurs are using and why it's been effective so far?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to note that roughly played the same amount of games with Wemby as they have without, to roughly the same level of success as far as win-loss record. And a lot of that is to do because Castle's been spectacular, because Fox has been really solid. And then Harper is, this is the thing I worried about going in, and says, well, will he be allowed to be a rookie, basically? If this team is saying, okay, we're ready to take a leap, is he allowed to do that? And he has. He has his good games, he has his bad games. He didn't shoot it tremendously well last night, but it's like, you can do that when you've got the coverage pretty much of two other guards playing at a high level. And then the other guy you got to throw in there is Devin Vassell. Awesome last night, and he's been a real steady setting force for them throughout the season thus far. It's hard to imagine, like, 2 years ago, this team was like a joke, and we're like, what are they doing? You got Jeremy Sohan bringing the ball up. And it just felt like, what are we doing? I get it.
A soft tank is what it seems like it actually was.
But I guess it worked because they got all these guys now. So, I mean, if I'm a Spurs fan, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I think I can put it no better way than this. The Thunder looked mortal. And I don't just mean mortal, like didn't have a good game. I mean, they, for the first time this season, looked unsure of themselves. Like, wait, what's happening? This is the part where they lay down. They didn't lay down, and you could see the, what do we do now? I mean, Shea had to be a lot more aggressive in the second half, kind of to force the issue. But San Antonio just wouldn't back down. And I think for the first time, you see vulnerability. Not vulnerability in that there's a flaw in the way Oklahoma City is constructed or even the way they play, in that there's someone that they fear. He put fear in them in the way they played and adjusted the way they attack. And when you start to think about those guys developing the chemistry, because again, like you said, this is the first time we've even had those guys all available. That's the part that we're going to be watching for from now, probably until mid-February, just to keep track of like the next 20 games or so. They can stay healthy. How does this work? And then do we start to see Mitch Johnson throw in different wrinkles, like a three, those three guards at the same time?
I mean, I think what you're touching on, I mean, with the guards, right? Yeah. It's kind of, you know, it's similar to the OKC formula, having a bunch of ball handlers on the floor, a bunch of guys that can play with the ball in their hands, and a bunch of guys who can defend multiple positions as well. And with OKC,
and a bunch of guys who can shoot.
Yes, exactly. And with OKC, that's one of the things that you're touching on as well, that Wemby changed. We talked about how Wemby impacted OKC's shot distribution when they were on offense, but also when Wemby was on the floor, they were defending him like they defended Jokic. We saw in the semis, Caruso, and I mean, it's whether it's J-Dub or Caruso throwing two at them sometimes. Yep. They're not just, you know, plowing through screens and they're changing the way they have to defend as well. Do you think is there some type of formula that we saw from San Antonio in this, or would that be an overreaction from just one game?
There's a formula. I have one of the best players
have
ever.
Victor Wembanyama.
Or Jokic, if you have one of those too, like that works too. No, it speaks to how good Oklahoma City is. We're heaping all this praise and we're saying, oh my God, it looked, you know, like for the first time, it looked vulnerable. And they lost the game by 2 points, right?
Yeah, super cool. And like if they hit a handful more threes, they might win by seven, right?
And it's a funny thing. We're watching that last possession. Jalen Williams gets the intentional foul. He makes the first free throw. He has to miss the second. And before he shoots the second one, I'm sitting next to Jay Adanda and he says, you know, there's like a 44% chance that Alex Cruz is going to get this offensive rebound. And we joked, though, like, oh, what is that? Your Amazon Prime stats or whatever? Yeah, it's powered by AWS. And literally right there, Caruso gets in there. He had an amazing
game. There was really a chance.
It's one of those things where it's like, we're going to talk a lot about the victors, but Alex Caruso last night was spectacular. His timing with his and his hands are so good. There were so many times where, you know, they threw Wemby the ball and that collapse happened. And wherever he showed, it was either Dort or Caruso, hand on the ball every single time. It was I'd never seen anything like it as far as again and again and again, not a blind hack of the wrist. Like they're getting hand on ball every single time. And it just That's what makes them so tough, is that they have a roster full of guys like that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, up and down the whole roster, and with Caruso in particular. I think it was like mid-third quarter where he had a steal and then a layup, and then I think he caused another turnover, yeah. And then there's a missed three in the corner, if I remember correctly. But it was like just this crazy Caruso sequence, and that's a normal thing for him. But it's Kayson Wallace, it's Lu Dort, it's J-Dub. I mean, it's all these guys.
They
up
come
and
in
down.
Waves. Yes. It's just they keep coming, and that's the part that – I'll be honest, that's why they're the favorites. It's because at any time.
So they're 24-2. I mean, we're talking about it happens to be a day after their second loss in 26 games.
It's truly remarkable when you say everyone on our roster defends, everyone on our roster can create a little bit to some extent, everyone on our roster can shoot. And most importantly, everyone on our roster is selfless.
Yeah.
They don't care who gets the glory, so to speak. And when you have that, That's what makes it hard. It's already shooting, through a needle, through the eye of the needle, as far as having just a roster of people who do that. Then you say, oh, and they're all great people who are team oriented and selfless. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about a 1 in a billion scenario.
It's the truth with them. And I think like you only can wish you could replicate something like that if you're one of the 29 other teams. And I think with San Antonio, I mean, this win, I mean, it's just one win, but it's a pretty telling win, especially following all the success they had with Victor Wembanyama, without Victor Wembanyama, and then you win this game. And I'm sitting there, in my hotel last night thinking about, wow, like they actually beat the Thunder. And I'm thinking about, would it make more sense for the Spurs moving forward to stick with this younger group, stick with this team that they have, like the Thunder sort of did, but until adding Caruso, until adding Isaiah Hartenstein before they won the title, or have the Spurs shown enough that it's worthy being aggressive this year?
That's an interesting question because we're talking about Giannis, right? Let's we're not just talking.
I don't know who else it would be.
Right,
Lowry, Markkanen. Maybe it's just Giannis, and that's it.
It's Giannis. It's hard because he's such an incredible player, but he plays a very specific style, and you have to account for that. And
installing it mid-season.
Yeah. And the age difference, you've markedly moved up the timeline in that you look at this collection right now, and it's not out of the question now for us to see it now and say, this could be a championship contending team. Maybe not this year, but it's like with reasonable improvements from
Harper becomes an all-star caliber player,
Even if he doesn't. Let's just say Harper becomes an all-star caliber player later in his career. But for right now, just Harper gets better.
Yes.
More consistent, mm-hmm. right?
Even Vassell could get better. Continue to improve.
Fox gets back to all-star form, right? Castle is the one I would say. Yes. You pencil him to be an all-star soon. And then Wembanyama just continues to grow and get better offensively.
Instead of top five, he becomes the unquestioned best player in the world.
At that point, you look at it and you're like, that's a team that can contend for the championship, for sure. So if we're patient enough with this cake that we're baking, we'll get to where we want to go. You get Giannis, and it's kind of like, it could work.
Now
if it doesn't work, then where are you? And then you throw in like, well, what's it going to cost? What's the cost of getting Giannis? Because Milwaukee's going to ask for, Castle.
I'd imagine Harper or Castle would have to be in that.
Right. And so where does that
Bucks
leave
start
you?
Off asking for both? They're not going to get both, but maybe you end up with one.
Right. So I think in the same way that we've had the conversation, if you're Oklahoma City, do you go after Giannis? I think it has to make sense, not only basketball-wise, but also fiscal planning-wise, cap situation. For Oklahoma City, they're in a different scenario because you have Hartenstein and Dort. Next year is the last years of their deals. They've both outplayed whatever they're getting paid right now. Then you've got Holmgren and J-Dub. Next year balloons up to max deals for both of them. So you're going to be in a situation, not next season, but the season after that, where you're, if everyone stays, let's just assume they keep everybody, you are absolutely playing with aprons. is that a palatable financial situation for Oklahoma City? If it's not, then how do we reallocate this? Well, if I get Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't need a Hartenstein, right? I'm going to probably have to sacrifice another, one of the other big three guys in the thing. So I do have cost savings there because I'm saying I've replaced not only a center, but also a star.
So you'd actually think about it if you were OKC.
I think you have to talk about it. There's no part of this where you're like, absolutely not. And the same thing for
the SGA Giannis fit would be a very complicated debate within the front office, I'm sure, as well.
It's a complicated debate in every team that's good.
That's true, yeah.
Teams where it's like, it doesn't matter. Like Miami, it's like, yes.
Take him in.
Absolutely. Yep. We'll figure it out later. But if you're San Antonio or Oklahoma City, where you're
Houston, team like that.
You're in a legitimate situation like, we could win a title with this collection. Are we a Giannis away, or is a Giannis kind of almost a delay, not a step back, but a delay just because you have to figure it out? Because again, I think the Damian Lillard trade taught us, it ain't as plug and play as you might think with Giannis. Like, oh, we just get him a great perimeter guy and it should work. It didn't work in Milwaukee, in part because Giannis is very set in the way he plays, and he's great. Why wouldn't he win a championship playing that way? Why wouldn't he? But if you're one of these teams that's kind of on the cusp, or like Oklahoma City, you're in the zone, you have to have a conversation. You have to have some skepticism.
I mean, it's definitely a fair question. I think, like, if you're a Giannis fan, you're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
If you're a Giannis stan, like, what do you mean? How could he not help a team? Well, right. I mean, it's complicated, especially mid-year.
Right.
And that's the thing. If it were the offseason, that'd be a different conversation for some of these teams. Clean slate, training camp ahead, all this and that.
Right.
But mid-season, it's definitely a complicated question. I mean, with OKC, I can't imagine that they would end up doing it. I think Presti and the Thunder will probably, you mentioned, replacing these expensive guys.
Right.
Eventually, it's going to be the type of thing where we have this young guy who can come in.
Thomas Sorber.
Hartenstein goes and Sorber goes in. Yeah. It could be that type of thing. And we'll see over time how that develops. I think part of it, like, what I'm just so excited about is just this rivalry that's potentially brewing between San Antonio and Oklahoma City. Like, even Wemby after the game saying it felt like a shot at the Thunder. It felt almost like a two-on-line shot. Right. He's like, I'm glad to be part of something so beautiful, pure and ethical basketball. Yeah. Pure. And he used the word ethical.
Yeah.
He pulled out the E word, ethical.
That was funny. I was like, wait a second. Is he doing the what they call SGA? Like the
grifter? Foul grifter?
No, it was like the unethical whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Which is dumb.
It is silly. I mean, you could take away all the drawn fouls from SGA, and he's still highly efficient in ISOs and pick and roll.
And it's like, oh, man, like, what are you complaining about? It's too hard to guard him? Yeah, that's the point. They're not fouling him because, you know, they're angry. They're fouling him because he moves in a way that makes it almost impossible for your body control to stay in a sound defensive position without fouling him. That's the idea. That's the point. But I do like, you know, it's funny. Wemby can say that, and he can do things, and I think we're still in that stage where it's almost like it's cute, so you let him do it. So last night, he had an and one, and he flexed.
Wait, was that in front of Caruso, I think it was, right?
And then he walked him down and kept flexing, and 449 other players in the league. That's a technical foul.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was like, you could flex, but you can't walk a guy down and kind of like following him around while still screaming and flexing.
That's
a technical foul. But nobody even, like, we're like, oh, man, look, he's growing up, man.
it's so funny. And I think, like, the Wemby-Chet rivalry that could brew over time as well. Block Chet in the game. Chet did not have a great game. I mean, he ended up with 17 points, 12 free throws, but he's only 3-for-8 in the game. I didn't feel like he had a great game. It's almost surprising looking at the box score and seeing 17.
Right.
It just feels like Wemby is eating his lunch a bit.
I mean, like, it's the comparison just because they're tall and skinny. That's where it ends. And that's not a knock on Chet. Mm-hmm. It's a compliment to just how great Victor Wembanyama is.
Of course. The only other thing from that game was an awesome game, an unbelievable game until the final minute.
Oh, the fouling up three.
It just took momentum away from the game.
This goes out to all the nerds. Here's my camera here, right? This goes out to all the nerds on the internet. Every time someone doesn't foul up, they're like, oh, you see what it looks like when someone does it right? It's not the best flow. It's not the best end of
disgusting.
The game.
Disgusting.
How would you fix that? Because Jay Adande had a fix for me last night. I was like, I don't know if I like that.
I mean, there's different ways to go about it. I think you could, the most common way you hear people say is, well, it can be a side out or free throws, but then that could create an endless loop possibility. Yeah. I don't think you can do that. I think maybe you could have a certain amount of times you can do that.
Right.
Maybe that's possible. And then it becomes one free throw plus the ball.
Yeah.
Something like that in the final minute of games. That's sort of what I'm thinking about. Like you're allowed one and then it's one free throw plus possession.
Right.
Something along those lines.
I worry about the unintended consequence.
I agree. Because what is a foul? What's intentional and all this and that, you know?
Yeah. It's like, they're like, no, I was just guarding him.
Yeah. I didn't mean to foul.
I didn't mean to foul
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm not so sure that it works.
Yeah. Adande's solution was under like 30 seconds. Like in that scenario, basically. If you foul like that, automatic three free throws.
And automatic.
And he said, and then you'll get rid of it immediately. And I said, I don't know about it. Like, I just worry about the unintended consequences.
If you fall on a drive to the rim.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's common sense that it's not intentional, though.
Sure,
in that case,
unless,
right?
But it could be, right? If I'm going
to. Couldn't that be up to the discretion, though?
I'm up three, and my man has taken a drive.
Sure.
I'm tackling him at that point. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead. Shoot two free throws, right? And so now,
what if it's fouls just behind the arc, like we saw with the fouling last night, where they were fouling as they crossed half court,
right?
Quote unquote, before the shot was taken,
right.
What if just those ones were three free throws automatically?
I think about these rules, and I'm like,
well,
man.
Use the G League for it. Yeah, maybe that's what the NBA should do. Use the G League for these.
Well, I'm still on the G League, where they got to do the thing where if a player does this, it's like a player calling timeout. Mm. Well, granted, immediately, if you don't have any technical foul, because I'm sick and tired of every little play, no matter. It's 10 seconds of the game. Guys doing this. You know what? Yeah, let's do it. You want this power? You got the power. Mm. Right?
Like, interesting.
Get rid of that. We should treat this like a timeout. If you're going to do this, it means something. And it doesn't matter who does it, whether it's the head coach or a player on the floor. If you do it, we're going to take it immediately. And so that gets rid of this constant complaining guys have about, like, oh, we got to review that because I didn't touch it. Or I'm like, who cares, man? Just play.
Mm. I think target score is the other one, Elam ending, as people call it. I think it's too big of a change.
It's not
going to happen. I don't think target score is even an option that should be on the table.
Yeah.
It's just too big of a change. I just can't see it happening. Maybe for overtime, you know, you use that, like overtime becomes that. But even then, I can't fathom the NBA doing such a dramatic change. But I think there's little things with the following up three that maybe over the course of time, hopefully they use the G League to. Would you change it? I get the impression you wouldn't even change it.
I would like to see what it looks like in practice, because I don't trust.
So experiment.
I don't trust our players.
Either with the G League or eventually when the NBA launches their European League. Use it in one of those, and then after that, make a change.
I'll say it again. I don't trust our players with any sort of scenario. If this happens, you get free throws. Like, bet. Like,
sure.
They will manufacture. They'll figure out a way.
And we'll be right back after this break. In the early game, we saw the Magic and the Knicks face off. The Knicks win that game 132-120. The big mistake happened in the third quarter. 3:32 left in the third. Magic are up 89-88. Mosley puts in an all-bench lineup.
Yeah.
And then the Knicks go on a 12-3 run to finish off the third quarter with a Brunson assist to Mitchell Robinson, a Brunson floater, Brunson pull-up, Brunson assist to Bridges, Brunson step-back three, Brunson free throw assist to Mitchell Robinson. And that was all part of his 40-point masterpiece.
Right.
We saw, I guess, a really tough Magic defense going against Jalen Suggs and Anthony Black. Brunson just, it looked like, absolutely unbelievable in the game.
So if Thunder Spurs was the game of the day, the player of the day was Brunson crossing up Anthony Black so bad.
Awesome.
And it took so long, because I'm watching it, and like, he crosses him over, Black falls down, the crowd goes, oh, Black turns and looks at the ref like, you shoved me out the way, ref says play on. He turns back, the shot still hasn't happened. Like, he literally has the conversation with the ref, turns back, Brunson just now loading up, and he knocks it. And I was looking, I was like, you better make this. this highlight disappear. We need this moment. It was an incredible play. And Brunson was, I mean, he's been spectacular. 35 points in each of the last few games here. He's so good, man. And so crafty. And it's, you know, I used to say this about guys like that. I said, it's the triumph of the human mind over the body. That's what Brunson is, right? Because it's like he's short, he's stumpy, he's not athletic, he's not bouncy, he's not quick. He's
very ground bound. It's not like he's a vertical sleeper.
So precise. The footwork and the step throughs. And so you said 40 points. How much of that was points in the paint? 20? 19? It was a lot. It was a high percentage of his points were all scored in the paint. And this is against a good Magic defense. I heard Coach Mosley talk about it after the game, and he was saying, you know, they're used to defending in a certain way. And if the whistles go against them, they can't defend that way. And then how do you, if I can't touch him, basically, if I can't guard the way we're used to guarding, how do you stop a Jalen Brunson? You can't. And we saw that last night.
Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely unstoppable in the game. The Knicks as a whole team played very well as well. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns had a great game pulling Wendell Carter out to the perimeter. Bridges and OG, everybody is good on that side. And I feel like with the Brunson aspect of it, when you juxtapose what New York's best player did against Orlando's best player, like on paper, Ben Caro, 25 points, 10 of 22, 3 assists to 5 turnovers. It wasn't a great game, but you know, on paper, it didn't seem bad. But yet watching the game, I felt like he's playing a certain way when the Magic want to play a different way. It just feels like a poor fit between superstar player, you hope, with the way this team wants to play.
He was detached. There were so many possessions where he didn't touch the ball on the possession. I'm not saying you got to give him a shot. You even touch it. They went to Suggs early and often. He had a great first half. I believe early in the third quarter, he has that and one. He falls down. You know, the hip bothers him. He tries playing through it. He doesn't play well. That's part of that, you know, that Nick turnaround. And then in the end, he basically has to sit it out, and they have to play Jet Howard and Jace Richardson, two young guys who haven't.
Richardson was pretty good. It was the end of the game.
They played well given the circumstances, but, you know, obviously they didn't make up for what Suggs was bringing. And then on the other hand, Banchero, like I said, so detached and removed from the flow of the offense that when he would get the ball, everything felt forced. It was the starvation of someone who was like, oh, I haven't had a touch. And so, oh, now I finally get it. Now I have to do something with it because I don't know when I'm going to get it again. And I think that's an important part of like understanding when you're trying to run that kind of offense. You got to find ways so that your star player feels involved.
So you think it's almost more on the Orlando, the empowerment of him more so than Banchero, his own approach to the game himself.
No, I mean, we know what he's about. He's, you know, so you've got to explain to him and like set it up for him to get those touches. I remember, so Channing Frye, we had Channing Frye in Phoenix, and whenever someone would shoot free throws, after the first free throw, no matter whether he was on offense or defense, Channing would grab the ball, massage it, and then hand it to the ref. And I said, Channing, why do you do that? He said, because I'll run up and down the floor 10 times and never touch the ball. I like to know what the ball feels like and feel comfortable so that when they pass me the ball, I can make that one or two shots or whatever I might get in the next 10 possessions. Channing's a role player, so he understood kind of like making the most of windows. And Carroll's a star who's played 4 years, however many years he's played in the league. But like all of those years, ball is in my hands. Ball. Now all of a sudden, you're telling me I'm going to go up and down several possessions without touching it. Like you got to teach him basically how to feel still in the rhythm and in the flow. Some of it is
how needy can a guy be though? It's not like he didn't have a ton of touches in the game overall. Kevin,
if you fly first class,
it's hard to go back to coach.
Then they put you in but it's exit row. You have the leg room and you know what? I'll do it so there's no one sitting next to you. You got the middle seats empty. It's like it's still not the lay flat with the champagne before we take off.
He had 92 touches in the game. What do you want?
The quality. What does it look like? Is it I'm in the corner and we just burnt 14 seconds doing something else and now I get it and now I feel like I have to do something with it, right? I'm not absolving him, but I'm saying when you make a shift in your system, you have to find a way for your best player to know how he can flourish. Phil Jackson put it in a triangle in Chicago. I mean, they were going ISO with Michael a whole bunch back then. And then all of a sudden, the triangle offense, you don't have the ball in your hands. But you understand where you're getting your same amount of touches and your shots. And so now he's in within the flow of the offense, but he still feels like, I'm comfortable. You can't just say, all right, you know, you may not touch it three or four times, and now you're going to get it, and expect him to still make the right plays and reads without having created that infrastructure. Now, you create the infrastructure, you talk him through it, whatever. He still can't do it. Now we have a different conversation. But the expectation that he should just get it immediately, I don't think that's appropriate.
I mean, I think part of what you're touching on is, like, it makes me think about the Knicks side of things. Like, the Knicks changed their offense mm-hmm. under Mike Brown compared to Tom Thibodeau last year, and Brunson is still getting those scoring chances. And right. sometimes they come in a different shape considering the way they've changed their offense. But ultimately, he's still getting his opportunities. And
yeah.
we saw that change. Tibbs to Mike Brown, so far it's early on, it seems like an upgrade for them with
right.
what they can be and what their ceiling can be. With the Magic side of things, I mean, like you said, the Suggs going out did impact their end of the third quarter, but still yeah. the all bench lineup, I'm watching the game live, like, really?
Yeah.
You know that now? Like, the Knicks still have their guys out there, and they just got absolutely shredded.
Ballsy move.
And with Mosley, I mean, I do wonder, we see the Knicks upgrade from Tibbs to Mike Brown,
yeah.
and they therefore look like a team more likely to potentially win the finals. Are we sure Mosley is the right coach for the Magic?
I think so. I mean, he's shown growth throughout his tenure. I talk about this all the time. We just got done talking about earlier, when Stephon Castle takes that leap, when Dylan Harper takes that leap, when Wembanyama makes that leap, you know, the progression. Coaches are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the idea
that with Mazzulla in Boston.
Yeah.
I was super critical of Mazzulla, and he turned into a great coach.
Jamal Mosley has been an assistant coach for a long time. But, man, there's nothing they tell you all the time. That's the hardest move to make, is, like, from this chair to this chair. Because you can be in this chair for 25 years, have all the answers, and be the smartest guy, whatever. You come over here, all of a sudden, it's a different beast, and no one's good at it immediately. There's a learning curve to it, and you hope, right? We know there's some coaches who are stubborn, but for most guys, there is a desire to change and learn and adapt and all those things.
To be fair, this is year five for him.
Exactly.
That's not like a rookie head coach, though.
So you mentioned the move from Tibbs to Mike Brown. I'm old enough to remember when Mike Brown was the guy who had an unimaginative
yes.
offense and could never get better. And, oh, my God, you guys got Mike Brown. Now Mike Brown's this offensive wizard.
Yes.
Well, how did that happen? Well, he learned. He grew. He's a student of the game. He improved as a head coach. Mike Brown won 66 games in Cleveland. I don't think anyone would tell you he was a better coach in 2009 or whenever that was, as opposed to in Sacramento or now. We all accept he's so much better. And part of that is, yeah, you know what these guys do when they're not the head coach? Number one, when they're not employed, they do the thing where they visit all these other coaches and they sit in on practices.
Do the Magic have time to wait, though? I mean, you're talking about Mike Brown 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's an example because, you know, we're talking sure. about him and it's an example of the growth or whatever. But the reality is, five years, and Jamal Mosley isn't the same even from year one to now. So can we not accept that, like, he's got some growth? It's not like he's got a roster. It's like, okay, they're knocking on the door and they haven't been able to get over the hump. And now you start to talk about, all right, what do we do next? He's got a fairly young group that have had injuries. They still haven't had kind of the full complement for a good deal of time. You got to give them a chance to be able to do it. Yeah, you're going to make mistakes. But overall, I think he's done a good job of getting them from point A to point B. And you got to give it a chance.
I mean, I'm pushing back, but I agree with you. I think he deserves some time here.
Yeah.
I think the Banchero question is the bigger one, and we'll see over time. He had a great playoff last year. We'll
right.
see how it develops over the course of the season. On the Knicks side of things, are we overthinking it with the Knicks? Are they just the clear-cut favorites in the East?
I mean, Detroit would like a word, right? And I think the East, even if we do call them the favorites, you're still – I think we all accept that the Eastern Conference has a volatility to it that the West doesn't. The West were like OKC, and then Houston and Denver, and then everybody else. Maybe the Lakers, maybe the Spurs, whoever, but like we all expect that. What do we expect in the Eastern Conference? It's already kind of turned on its head. Toronto is good now. They're not as good, right? Miami started crazy. Now they're coming back down.
Mm-hmm.
Boston was struggling. Now they're starting to get stronger, right? And all throughout it, while the Knicks and the Pistons have been winning, they're not doing basically the Oklahoma City thing where it's like they're clearly better than everybody else. You got Detroit, you know, what was that, 3 weeks ago, whatever, killing itself to beat the Wizards in overtime.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got the Knicks losing to the Magic without Banchero a couple of weeks ago. There's still these things that make us say, okay, you're not infallible. Yes, you are the favorites, but we still look at, I mean, hell, Atlanta, they still kind of, I'm interested to see what happens. Porzingis is back. Trae Young is supposed to be back any day now. What do they look like when they try to, you know, you talk about changing how you play, this Jalen Johnson-centric thing, and then you integrate Trae Young in it. Can that work? And if it does,
could
it
enhance him? Could hurt him?
Right.
We'll see.
We'll see. But if it enhances them, okay, now how do we feel about Atlanta, yes, right? We mentioned Boston playing a lot better lately, but Simons kind of still hasn't really hit Simons levels from Portland. What happens if he gets comfortable? Cleveland has had injuries.
What happens if Tatum comes back?
That's off the table.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
It's one of those things where you just say it so that people get excited.
I don't know. We'll see. We shall see. Boston puts him on his injury report every day. Tatum's not ruling him out. They're not ruling him out. I wouldn't rule him out.
We get the workout videos and all that. I'm like, this is all propaganda.
We'll see.
There
could be a day like their injury report drops instead of Tatum being out, you know, Achilles recovery at turn. Yeah. It is Tatum Achilles recovery questionable.
Right.
That day could come.
Sure.
I don't know.
Cleveland's another one where it's like, now we have Mobley's out with a calf strain. And before we had, obviously, Garland missed time and he's kind of in and out of the lineup with that turf toe injury. Max Strus hasn't played. And so what happens, and Jared Allen missed a bunch of time. What happens when Cleveland gets whole again? Like, there's a lot of variables in the Eastern Conference.
What about the Sixers?
That's the one I don't.
I mean, we just saw Embiid destroy the Pacers after a couple of real dud performances. He really struggled against the Lakers at 4-for-21 in that game. And then he had 39 against, granted, the Pacers. Stink.
Fool me once, but shame on you. Fool me 6 million times. The Sixers, look, they might win. They win the championship this year. I'll be the first one to say, hey, I didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. But like, they've lost any sort of, well, if this happens, these other teams, yeah, it's like, oh man, that stinks. But for Philadelphia, this is who you've been every year. At some point, we just have to stop giving them the benefit of that doubt.
Totally fair. I mean, I think the Knicks, I'd pick them to win the East as of today. But a lot can change.
That's a good way to put it.
But so much can change. All right, I mean, we do have the final on Tuesday. Get 2 days off here in Vegas before the Spurs-Knicks face off. What to you is the key matchup in that game?
Oh, it's got to be Brunson and whoever's that match, whether it's Fox, whether it's Harper, whether, like, them being able to contain Jalen Brunson. Wembanyama is still going to be on a minutes restriction. And obviously him being able to impact the game the way he did last night is certainly on the table. But, you know, you think about how many shots Oklahoma City missed last night when they had those opportunities. The Knicks probably aren't going to make those mistakes. Right, you can't count on that. In other words, I'm like, oh yeah, they'll just miss some shots and we'll be fine. You know, especially you got Karl Anthony Towns, his ability to stretch the floor, bring Wemby out like legitimately in a way that Chet and Hartenstein can't. Now, what does that mean for the driving lanes for Brunson, for Ananobi, for Bridges, all those guys? So to me, it all starts with neutralizing Brunson, because if you can't get a hold of him, can't get control of him, you see what happens. Once he gets 2 feet in the paint, it just shifts everything and it makes everything a lot harder. For the Spurs, I think, obviously you can't have Wembanyama come in and just change the impact if you're the Knicks. So making sure that you're doing pretty much what Oklahoma City did, physical, and then the help comes from everywhere. And the Knicks have personnel to do that, right? The question is, do they have the personnel to do that when you have Towns and Brunson on the floor at the same time? They have it, but they won't have it. You can't do it with just three guys on the floor doing it. You got to have at least four kind of.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, you touched on it. If the Spurs have Wemby defend like a Josh Hart,
Right.
Instead of, rather than being guaranteed pulled out to the perimeter by Cat, if they just say, okay, we're going to leave you open, Josh Hart.
Right.
Granted, he's going to have hot shooting nights.
Yep.
He's also going to have a lot of cold shooting nights. And if it's one game to win, I do wonder if that's at least something we'll see them try in order to keep Victor near the basket.
I think the problem is Josh moves a lot.
Yes. Constantly in motion, screening and cutting and everything.
And crashing boards. And so it's not like remember, was it Roberson? Oklahoma City back
in the corner. Like,
he's in the corner. All right, whatever.
I think of the Tony Allen treatment a decade ago.
You can't do that with Hart because he's just so active. They might have to try it. We'll see how it goes. Maybe the minutes match up when Mitchell Robinson's out there. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. The hard part is, again, with a minutes restriction, you have to make sure, like, hey, if we're going to use him, we're using him now. Okay, this has to be the optimal strategy. But then at the same time,
do we know how harsh that minutes restriction will be? He played 21 minutes on Saturday night. Is it going to be 25? Is it going to be 30? Maybe they push him to 30.
Or how does it go? Like, does it go? Last night they sat him the entire first quarter. I don't think any of us expected that.
That was strange. Yeah.
Right. But we'll see how it goes. I'm happy that we're in a place now where it seems like in year three, and obviously great play has helped for that, but we're past the, this is dumb, why are we doing this, nobody cares, it doesn't matter, conversation about the NBA Cup. And now we're out here like, oh, what are the chess moves, the chess match that's going to happen between Mike Brown and Mark Daigneault. Mark Daniels. Wow, look at me.
We had OKC in our mind hours.
Wrote the headline weeks ago, right? The Mike Brown and Mitch Johnson. it's cool to be here. I walked out of that building last night on this weird high.
Yeah,
I can't lie. I haven't felt in December in a long time, and I'm really excited for Tuesday night. I just hope everyone's healthy. We don't have any. Every time Wemby fell, man, it's.
I know it is always scary. Yeah, it is, but I feel the same way. But I was here year one.
Yeah.
And I think it was definitely good energy. The Lakers were there that year, and LA's so close to Vegas. But I think this year now, I missed last year. I think now year three, you saw Lakers beat the Pacers, Bucks beat the Thunder last year. And now, obviously, we'll see what happens between the Spurs and the Knicks. It feels like a good energy, and the games feel competitive.
Right.
In a way, I think the only issue right now for the NBA is just, the confusion for fans when games are on certain nights. Yeah. I think they need to have like 2 weeks of the season or three weeks of the season where every game is a cup game.
Yeah.
And it leads straight into it. And it's like all part of
you're messing with the money, because then Amazon's like, we love that. We'll have every single game. I'll tell you what, year one, it felt perfunctory in the way that, like, well, dad says I have to care about this. Lakers won it, and LeBron, he carries himself like a statesman or whatever, but like, you didn't get that sense of exuberant joy, right? Last year, better with the Pacers, because Halliburton and there was this thing, they're like, they come off the conference finals appearance a year before, and it's like, oh wow, this is kind of like the coming out party and the announcement or whatever. And then obviously you also had a little bit of friction in Pacers and Bucks that it's been brewing. This year, it's like everyone here was like, you could tell they wanted
it. Oh, for sure.
I did my radio show with Jason Jackson this morning. He said the locker room in Miami after they lost to Orlando, they blew that big lead. It's like, it felt like a playoff loss. They were down. Like, this was a legitimate blow. They were looking forward to it. Even I remember the sounds of the game. Spo in the middle is like, are you guys trying to go to Vegas or not? Basically, he's imploring the guys. It's gotten to a point now where I think the critical mass of the players clearly care. The fans seem to be in it. And we have a broadcast partner who's like, this is their baby. So they're giving it the love and attention. And that's half the battle sometimes. If the people on TV tell you this matters, then it matters. If you have a panel of people say, I don't know why we're doing this. And I'm like,
just another regular season game.
This is awesome. Like, these two teams want this. This is important. This is real. Like I said, look at how Oklahoma City acted at the end of that game. They felt like Caruso got fouled on that last play.
They're pissed.
Yeah. And it wasn't just because, our streak got broken or, we lost a game. It's because they want to play for this cup. It means something.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's growing. Yep. That there's something here that the NBA has, and over the course of time, it's going to continue growing and hopefully gain an importance in the years to come. I mean, no matter what happens this year, the Spurs or the Knicks, if they obviously you want to win the NBA Finals, but especially for a young team like the Spurs, you feel like you accomplished something.
If
you do win this cup,
this is kind of like the kids when they saw him on the door frame and put the line like, oh, look at how much I've grown.
That's a great.
That's
point.
A version of this for young teams. The other part of this, I think it's really important. Like if the Spurs win, Wembanyama obviously feels like based on last night, he'd probably be MVP. When kids who are 9 or 10 years old now, a decade later playing in the NBA, and they look at the history of NBA Cup MVPs, like, well, LeBron won the first one, Giannis won the second one, and then Wemby won the third one. And it's like, this is something important. This, if you want to be thought of one of the greats, you got to have one of these in your trophy case, right? As opposed to kind of like, you guys going to hang a banner, you're going to do parade. Like, that's how we were year one. But over time, you look back, you're like, yeah, no, the great players win this. The great teams win this, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that's also part of cementing it as a part of the culture in a way that people could not envision a couple of years ago.
I say it all the time on the pod. Like, it's clearly not going to happen this year, but there will be a day that a team wins the NBA Cup, has the best regular season record, and they win the NBA Finals. I don't know when it will happen. It's not happening this year, the year where it felt like a team would do it in OKC.
To be fair, maybe OKC has a collapse towards the end.
Maybe the Spurs go on a massive run. You never know. Or the Knicks go on a massive run. You never know. But ultimately, I think the Spurs, I'm going to pick them to win this game. I think Wemby has another massive game. I'm picking the Spurs to beat the Knicks. What's your prediction?
Let me ask you a question before we get to that. What do you think the crowd's going to look like? Because the first game, I thought, there are Knicks fans everywhere.
Yes.
Clearly, it's going to be a Knicks partisan crowd. Wasn't as partisan as I would imagine. No. I would say probably 60-40 Knicks fans. And that's for if I take the entire population, it's probably even smaller percentage because they're just a bunch of, not apathetic, but just kind of agnostic fans. They're just people there because they're in Vegas and they want to go to the NBA Cup game. That Spurs game, that was a Spurs crowd.
Yeah.
That was a Spurs. When Shea got fouled and they started booing, I was like, oh shit. Like
I'd say 75-25.
That wasn't a neutral site.
It was a good amount of OKC fans, but it was a lot more Spurs
fans.
It
was not a neutral site.
Yeah.
It was not a neutral site. And so I'm curious.
And how much of that also was Wemby fans?
Of course.
Not just Spurs fans who flew in from San Antonio, but like kids here and they'd love Wemby.
Anybody, right?
Yes.
I'm curious to see what wins out. Is it the novelty of Victor Wembanyama and the attention he draws, or is it the number one media market and has expats all over the country? What's that crowd going to look like Tuesday night? I'm really interested on that. As far as a winner, I think the Knicks win it.
Okay.
I think the Knicks win it. I just think they have a lot more clarity of how they want to play than the Spurs do. It worked last night, but there are parts of this where we're like, again, when Wemby sat that first time after he brought him back, and then that lead went up to 16, I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
Like, it was nice while it lasted. So I think the Knicks have more clarity, and I think there's some level of, like, they want to prove it. The Knicks have a thing about them where we're all like, come on, it's the Knicks. They'll mess it up. And so I think there's going to be a level of kind of desire there that'll fuel them.
I'm fired up. Thank you so much for taking time of your day. Thank you, dude. All right, coming up, we have Chris Haynes to talk about some of the news going on around the NBA. All right, let's talk about some of the latest news around the NBA. Joining me from Amazon and the Association, Chris Haynes.
KLC, what's going on, man?
I'm doing great, man. Just here in Vegas. You had a little interview with Rachel Nichols the other day. Made a little bit of news about Giannis Antetokounmpo. You said he would, quote, would like to have some sun in a big market on a team where he can compete for a championship. Is that kind of a little hint at what the list might look like for Giannis?
I'm going based off of the conversations I've had with them in the past where you know, he wouldn't mind seeing some sun, but I don't think that's the only qualification. You know, I wouldn't.
Where does it rank? Is it below big market or above big market?
I think that would probably be above big
Interesting.
Market.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So that could be a good thing. I mean, does San Antonio count as sunny? It's Texas. Get the heat.
Yeah.
Does that count? I mean, or are we talking beach heat, beach
that,
sun?
I think that would count. I don't know that San Antonio has that level of interest right now like they might have had in the past. So it remains to be seen because Giannis hasn't requested a trade. He hasn't said he wants to go anywhere. But what he has said and what he has stated, you know, he's had multiple meetings with the team over the past offseason, you know, trying to explain to them what he wants to do. He wants to win. He wants to win more rings. He's not happy with one. He wants to be surrounded with a roster that has a legitimate chance to compete. So the organization understands that. They did that. That's why they felt like waving and stretching Damian Lillard, you know, in order to sign Miles Turner. They felt like that was a way, especially in the Eastern Conference, that was a move that they could make to try to keep them in contention. You can make the case, though, with the way the Bucks have started out, right? If this is going to be a downward year anyway, you could make the case, like, well, you might as well just wait it for Dame, you know, to finish the year of
his recovery. Yeah, his recovery Achilles, period. Yeah.
And then come back stronger for next season. But those are tough decisions the Bucks front office had to make. So this is where we are.
Why doesn't Giannis just rip the Band-Aid off? It feels like a breakup right now. And he's like waiting for them to say, oh, we're going to end it. We're going to end it instead of him just making the decision himself. Yeah. What's going on there?
You know, that's funny. I saw Kendrick Perkins had his remarks. He called Giannis a coward and said he needs to come out and say something. And Giannis actually got into the comment section that had some words to say. It was funny. But
I didn't see that. What did Giannis say to him?
It was something along the lines of, oh, Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis had a remark in the comment section of the Road Tripping podcast. I believe it was on IG. And Bobby Portis said, hey, people talk. I guess he said something like people talking. And I guess there's still tension in our locker room too. You know, but basically, I guess trying to shy the report. And then Giannis responded back, like laughing and saying, Bobby, you think this is going to be us in a few years? Like having our own show, just talking trash. So, I mean, he's having fun with it, but you know, I don't know what he's going to do or how he's going to handle things, but you know, just from the conversation I had with him a week or so ago, he said he's not comfortable with all this, you know, just all the rumors and everything that's flying out there.
I mean, he brought it on though.
He claims it's not him. He says it's not him. He said he can't speak to.
How can he claim that when you're having conversations with him? He's talking with the team. How can he claim that?
Well, a lot of those conversations and I would say most of those conversations are his representatives.
So it's with the Giannis camp.
Yeah. So not necessarily him.
Okay.
And so he told me, he's like, look, I can't control what the front office decides to do. I can't control what my representation does.
See, Chris, saying all this makes me feel like it's like him avoiding accountability and like making it about everybody else.
I think what he's doing and the position he's taking is that, you know, he's going to give his all when he's out on the basketball court. And so he feels like if he's doing what he does on the court, like everything else will play out. It should play out in the right way. And if he's doing everything on the court and he's living up to his end, but the team still isn't up to par, man, you know, eventually he will have to say something, you know, directly to front office, or maybe say something publicly.
Or the Bucks ultimately could just say, you know what, we are on a downward trajectory here. We're just going to go get the best offer.
I think that, and that's what rival teams, that's what they're hoping for. The Bucks are just rip the Band-Aid off themselves, because obviously Giannis doesn't want, you know, he's built a lot of, you know, he grew up in Milwaukee. Like, that's his home. Like, he loves that place. So I don't think he wants to do anything that's going to alienate, you know, himself with that city and that community. So I think most people hope that the Bucks will come to the realization, like, hey, maybe we need to do something right for him. But as well, help us out in the future.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, he could come out like publicly, make a post, whatever, and say, I want to be traded. And nobody, I don't think anybody in Milwaukee would look down upon him. They would say, thank you. You brought us the best years of our franchise history.
I disagree, KLC.
Really?
I disagree. And the reason why I disagree, because, you know, the recent, would you have made that same statement before Dame requested his trade in Portland?
He didn't win a championship, though.
He didn't win a championship, but wouldn't you have said that, okay, Dame has spent 9 years here. He's tried, you know, they didn't fill the roster enough where they would be competitive in the, you know, in the Western Conference. Nobody's going to blame him if he wants to leave and go elsewhere. Would you have made that same case, or did you make that same case?
Let's go back to his thing.
Did you make that? Did you make that case with Dame?
I mean, yeah, I did feel like he should just be able to go.
Okay,
but how much I felt
that way as well.
Yeah,
and the only reason I bring that up, I felt that way as well. But then there was an outcry of negative criticism that came from the Portland fan base.
Isn't the negativity always louder though? It's just the truth online. No, that's the way it is.
But, you know, I was even, you know, because it was, you know, I read, you know, I check in with Twitter and, you know, the fan base to see what, you know, just kind of see what the public sentiment is, right, of each market. And, you know, when the Blazers were struggling and Dame was still giving you 30 or 40, you know, a game, I would see Portland fans saying, man, Dame should leave. He should leave. You know, Portland's not doing enough. Go elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Portland's not doing enough. These are Blazer fans.
Yeah.
And so I'm like,
which
okay.
is some Bucks fans.
Yeah, which yeah. was, yeah. exactly. And so, yeah, that's true. And then when it happened, it was those same fans that were, you know, that would kill them. You said you wanted to be here. Mm-hmm. You said you were loyal to the soil. You know, so to your point, I do agree with you. Like, he should be able to, Giannis, be able to say what he wants to do and if that's what he wants to do. But there would be a public local outcry of negative press that comes from that.
Yeah, I think it fades away.
It does. It fades away ultimately.
I mean, yeah. You did mention to Rachel in that interview, Knicks, Heat, Warriors, Spurs, Wolves, as teams that have always liked Giannis. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously everybody likes Giannis in their own way. Are the Warriors the team that would want Giannis the most?
Rachel came with a pretty good, I think the way the question she asked me is, what teams are Giannis interested in?
She asked you for Rachel. The list. She wanted the list.
I love Rachel, man. Rachel's something else.
If you sidestep that to go the other way, well, here are the teams that like Giannis. That's why I'm asking you here. Are the Warriors the team that would most want Giannis?
Yeah. No, Warriors are a team.
The Lakers have always wanted him.
Yeah. Yeah. The Warriors they're definitely a team. You know, there was a time I was covering the Warriors back in the day when Stephen Curry and Giannis, they were communicating quite a bit. And, you know, Steph would have fun with the media. There would be times where Steph and Giannis, they'll be talking. They'll have their hands over their mouths and talking. And I think one time we asked Steph, you know, about that conversation. And, you know, he said something funny, but it was kind of like the to add fire to the flames. He was just, you know, just tell them how good the Bay Area is. Something like, you know, he's just always playing. That's how Steph is. But there's always been interest from the Bay Area as it pertains to Giannis. Obviously, his wife, his family, they're from Fresno, which is, you know, that's my cousin. Those are my cousins. And so, you know, you have that California dynamic there. You know, again, it's going to be, you know, this past summer, it was all about the Knicks. It was the Knicks over the summer. They had there was interest from both sides. The Bucks do not want, let me just make this clear. The Bucks do not want to part with Giannis. They're doing everything that they can to try to, you know, to make him happy, to fill the roster. That would be suitable. So it's really going to come down to whether their hands are forced or if the Bucks are like, okay, let's do right by you. Let's see what we can do that would benefit both sides.
Why doesn't Stephen Curry just make some noise with that front office demanding more additions, demanding the team improve around him? Because he's still so amazing.
Yeah.
But the pieces around him, especially the youth, have not developed in the way they needed. Why doesn't he make some noise in the front office making demands?
It's never been his M.O. Just never been his M.O.
Shouldn't he, though, at this stage of his career? I mean, he still has opportunities to build his legacy, win more titles.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not like the Warriors have been inactive. You know, they did acquire Jimmy Butler last season. So
16-point-per-game player at this
16
point.
16-point, yeah.
12 shots.
Yeah, but I think playoff Jimmy is better than the 16 points.
Not his last
season.
11 games.
Not his last 11 games.
And then the postseason.
But you know what you're going to get from Jimmy. And
it's been a while, Chris.
They're quite. I mean, I can tell you're not a big Jimmy fan right now at this stage of his career. But all you can go off of is the track record, right? When postseason comes, Jimmy does tend to show up. And, you know, he had to get acclimated to the Golden State Warriors system. And so, I mean, but, you know, Golden State, they've always been out there browsing and trying to see if they can make moves. But to your point about Steph, he's never been – just never been that type of guy, you know. You know, you can make the case, like, why, you know, why isn't he that right now, especially at this stage of his career? You could argue he has maybe a few years left of his prime. That's crazy. I believe he's 37. We're talking about a few years left of his prime. But – you know, I don't know, but the Warriors, they will. I mean, look, they got Kuminga. It seems like something's going to have to happen.
I would be shocked if something didn't happen with him. It's just a matter of what.
Yeah.
I mean, in order to get a Giannis, you either have to give up Jimmy Butler or you have to give up Kuminga plus Draymond.
Yep.
Is that something the Warriors would actually do, is trade Draymond?
That I don't know. That's tough. Because, you know, there was a few years back where I actually thought there might be a scenario where the Golden State Warriors trade Draymond. This was years back. This is when, before they kind of revamped themselves and got another title.
This is when he was a bit out of shape.
Detroit back then.
Yes, back home for him.
Yeah, I was hearing that back then, but really it's been radio silence since then. So, I mean, that would be a bold move. Will they improve their roster? Probably so, but on paper.
But like, he is their heartbeat.
He's
their identity. Hey,
and the defensive, he's still a defensive stud, man.
Saw what he did against Victor 2 weeks ago whatever it was, back-to-back games. He's unbelievable.
He's one of the best defensive players I've seen, right?
Easily.
I covered my first year covering the Warriors as a beat writer. It was the first year was when Draymond won the Defensive Player of the Year award. And he was guarding AD. Isolation, Giannis isolation. Like, he was guarding some of the main guys and holding them well below
switching on their guards, average. Oh, he was every position,
but
around.
He's a guy that you can't look at the stats to dictate if he's a good player
not
on the side. He does so much for that team. He's one of the best I've seen.
I mean, I think Draymond's one of those types of guys many, many decades from now, a different generation of NBA fans, they're like, this guy made the Hall of Fame. It's like, no, let me explain to you, son.
there's context. Yeah, there's definitely context. You know, you got to explain. That's our job. But, you know, so often now today in our society, we don't look for context and to look deeper into situations. But for him, you would definitely have to.
For sure. I mean, I think the Warriors, I mean, I would put any of those guys on the table for an opportunity to get Giannis, but I'd prefer to go down the Butler path to go get Giannis.
you want to get Butler out of there.
I mean,
okay,
it's not that I want to get him out of there. It's because Draymond Green is part of the fabric of that team. That's why. It's not against Jimmy. I just don't think that team would have anywhere near the same defensive ability without Draymond Green.
I agree. And so I would think, look, for Milwaukee, you got to expand a potential trade package out, because I don't think Milwaukee would want.
It would have to be a three-way.
It would have
like
three-way.
It,
Milwaukee would want young.
Like a Phoenix or somewhere else, like that.
Milwaukee, they want young talent.
Yes.
And they want some draft capital. So that would be a tricky situation.
In some ways put the Warriors at a disadvantage when you think about the Spurs or the Rockets, like teams that in theory could go after a Giannis. I mean, I think December 15th is where a lot of players become trade eligible. Mm-hmm. So this is really where conversations start to happen with a lot of teams. We got news today that Evan Mobley will be out 2 to 4 weeks with a calf strain. Mm. The Cavs are 15-11. They're stumbling to start this season. Are the Cavs a team that you're hearing could be trying to make moves, or are they going to stick with what they got and try to build it out with this roster that did have a lot of success last year?
Yeah, I heard the moves that they will try to make will be along the edges. I haven't heard
any core pieces.
Yeah, that's what I heard as of right now, no core pieces.
Okay, that makes total sense for them. I mean, upgrade from a Lonzo Ball spot, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
What about the Atlanta Hawks? KP out now 2 weeks. The Potts issue continues to be a deal for him. I don't think that's ever going to go away based off what I've learned about that disorder he has. Potts. Trey's back soon. What are the expectations for the Hawks on the
towards
trade market?
The end of the month. I mean, he will trade. So Trey has an opportunity to be a free agent this coming up summer, I believe. Can you fact check me? That's true.
He does. I
think he has a player option maybe for next season.
Trae Young next season, he has I believe it is a player option. Yeah, okay. Just pulling it up as we talk. But yeah, I think it's a player option for Trey. Yeah.
So he has potential to be an unrestricted free agent this coming up summer. Atlanta Hawks playing some pretty good ball. Mm-hmm. They had a nice stretch there where they were one of the hottest teams in the league, right? I would say this is probably the most pivotal season for Trey. How he comes back, how he works his way back in with them, because the Atlanta Hawks have gotten a sense, they've gotten a feel of what this team is capable of doing without him, right? So does Trey make them better, or does Trey hinder them from reaching that next step? So that's why I say it's a very, very pivotal season for Trey. With that being said, I haven't heard anything concrete that would suggest that Trey will be moved in season. So I think his situation as of right now, as of what I'm hearing now, I think his situation will be decided ultimately this coming up offseason.
I mean, there's also just not a lot of teams that need a point guard. Yeah. It's just the reality of
it. It's not. I remember, like, you know, I was hearing, you know, a few years ago, I would have bet a few years ago that Trey would end up with the San Antonio Spurs.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. I had a feeling.
That's what I was hearing a few years back. Then they went Fox instead. And so that left Trey without I'm not going to say left Trey without, but I just didn't hear any other teams out there that would zero in on him.
Orlando, I heard rumblings about a couple years ago too, or maybe last year.
What team was this?
Orlando.
Orlando? Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of Orlando. Mm. But yeah, makes sense. Point guard, like, it's going to be tough. Though. Yeah, the market is tough now. The market is tough. There's not a lot of teams out there in need of a point guard. And so, again, like, you know, even how he comes back and, again, how he meshes is going to have a big say on, you know, what teams may have interest moving forward. Like, okay, they say, all right, he can play alongside other guys and let them handle the ball. Okay, maybe his stock or his value or their interest increases to him. So, you know, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Atlanta, like, assuming trades are off the table, I still think they're an interesting team to kind of upgrade from that Porzingis spot. He's got the big expiring salary. Yeah. If you can't trust him to stay on the floor, like, why wouldn't the Hawks be a team that's at least making a call to the Mavericks about Anthony Davis?
Yeah. I mean, isn't that what did Rich Paul in his new podcast with Max Kellerman?
Well, he hinted about Jalen Johnson.
That was Jalen
Johnson
in Milwaukee. That was a Giannis. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Because Jalen Johnson being from Wisconsin as well.
Yeah. That's right.
So I'm sure that was part of it. But I think the same logic of the Hawks going for a big fish like Giannis Antetokounmpo, I think it similarly applies about a guy like Anthony Davis as well, especially if, you know, you're giving up Porzingis and other pieces and assets, of course, to go get there. It's a lower cost than going to get Giannis. You're not giving up Jalen Johnson to get Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
But I think someone like that does raise their ceiling and be a great fit with Trae Young as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I'd go for.
I hear you. But, you know, there's the scare factor of acquiring AD. You know, just never know if he's going to stay healthy, the injury concerns. I don't know if they want to have another Kristaps, you know, situation. So that's the concern.
Understandably so. The Pistons are 20-5, best team in the East so far this season. Are they really a team that could have interest in Anthony Davis, as has been rumored?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. When you talk about a team like Atlanta, right, acquiring AD, you know, I believe there's concern there because you will depend on AD for a lot. You would depend on him a lot. Now, he goes into Detroit. This is a team that is clicking on all cylinders. It's very similar. I'm not saying it's the exact equivalent, but remember years ago when Detroit, they were playing well, looking good, then they acquired Rasheed Wallace. And Rasheed wasn't the Rasheed of old, but he was still pretty good. And you didn't have to ask him to do too much, right? He was just able to come and compliment, not even compliment, he did elevate the team.
Him and Ben Wallace.
Yeah, had Ben Wallace, but you had a break. So that's kind of how I look at AD, if AD and the Detroit move worked out, right? You got Cade over there. You got Durham over there in the backcourt. You know, I mean, excuse me, in the front court. Mind the paint. And then you add AD. And I think that would be the equivalent of Rasheed. Now, I'm not saying they will go on win the championship, but I'm saying you're not going to ask AD. You're not going to ask him to give you close to 30 points a game. So just ask him to be a really good piece. If he misses games, right, you know Detroit can win without him. But if he's there, I definitely think he enhances that squad.
Totally makes sense. And I think we also saw that, like, one of the guys I'd have to give up in a trade to go get him is Tobias Harris with his big expiring salary. It'd have to be something like Tobias Harris, Caris LeVert, and then they have a number of guys, Jaden Ivey type. Maybe it would have to be Ausar Thompson. But regardless of that other piece to get there financially, the fact they were so great early this season with that Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren front court, the two bigs, I'd like to see them double down. I mean, the East is so open.
We
don't know if Tatum's going to come back. Like the Knicks, they have a chance to win the NBA Cup, but we'll see what they look like come April and May. Mm-hmm. The Pistons, the window is open. And if you get in the finals, you never know what can happen. The Pacers just went to a Game 7 with the Thunder in the finals, and they very well could have won it. You don't know what can happen.
You know what can happen, and you don't know the matchups you get, right? Because you automatically assume, okay, all right, the top seed, what was last year? The Cleveland Cavaliers, right? Had the best record in the East. They flame out in the first round. Then all of a sudden, the seedings are screwed up, right? You actually have a path, right? And so, you know, that's what you got to do. And I, of all the, like, crazy potential deals I've heard associated with Anthony Davis, Detroit, to me, makes the most sense. That's why I'm like, if they can pull that off, I can see something beneficial out of that.
Two of the names you hear a lot in trade conversations with people around the league is Trey Murphy and Herb Jones from the Pelicans.
Yeah.
The Pelicans are terrible this year.
Herb Jones.
Yeah, I mean, they don't need to trade anybody to be worse. Trey,
Golden State.
And they don't have their own pick.
Yeah.
So they don't have incentive to be worse anyway. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the names you hear for those teams.
Yeah.
You said Trey Murphy with Golden State and Lakers with Herb Jones.
Yeah, those are calls that Golden State and the Lakers have made to New Orleans about those players. There have been other teams as well. Trey off the bat. It was one more team on Trey I heard. Can't think of it off the top of my head. But, yeah, those are teams. Yeah, those are hot. Those are definitely hot commodity type
East
players
team,
right
West
now.
West team for Trey Murphy?
I think both West teams. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think who would make sense off the top West of teams. My head. Spurs could be interesting. Wolves probably don't have the assets. Mm-mm. That makes sense.
God, I can't.
Not the Rockets?
Nah, it wasn't the Rockets.
Not the Spurs?
Nope.
Not the Wolves?
Nah, it wasn't the Wolves.
Suns?
No, definitely not the Suns. They're not going that path right now.
I think both of those guys are definitely pieces that could help round out the championship team for sure. But with New Orleans, of course, being as bad as they are, there's no reason to get worse. And if you view those guys as keepers long term,
Well, listen, this is Joe Dumars' first year. He's going to construct the roster that he can call his own. So I don't think he's tied in. Zion, right? So. I wouldn't say he's tied in with any player. He's not married to anybody right
just
now.
Just Derek Queen and Jeremiah Fierce.
Those are the guys. This is rookies. Yeah. And so everybody else, they're under an evaluation process. And let the chips fall where they may.
It seems like the Mavericks could go in either direction, adding, subtracting. What's your sense of what the preferred path is for the Mavericks?
My sense is subtraction. That's my sense. I remember at the beginning of the year when the Mavericks were starting Cooper Flagg at the point guard position, right? So I called Kid. I was like, Kid, he's getting a lot of flack for it. I said, Kid, why are you? I said, what's up? Can you explain this rationale? I'm going on TV. I would like to explain. He was like, it's simple. He said, we're in a rare, unique situation where we're trying to compete now for a championship and we have to develop our number one pick. Right. He said, so if I have to develop this prospect, I want to put him at the point guard role where he have to learn different schemes. He have to learn the movement, learn the plays as a point guard. You got to know where everybody's out on the floor at all time, as well as we, help develop his all around ball handling game, decision making. Right. He said he's not going to learn all of that being at his regular small forward position. Right. He said, so it's rare that you have a situation where we're trying to win now, but we have to develop this guy. He said, then, he did the same thing with Giannis when he was in Milwaukee, started him at the point guard position. And now, Giannis is one of the most best all-around players we have. So I'm like, okay, I got it from that standpoint. But it was clear, during that process, it was just tough. It was just tough. You're trying to win now. You're trying to assert this rookie. You're trying to force feed him into, you know, certain looks to get him some action to run. It was conflicted. That's basically what it was. And so I don't think it's best. Like, they're injury prone right now. They got guys in and out. I think you got to pull the Band-Aid off and start over. Start with Coop.
Speaking about Jason Kidd, one of the things I've heard from multiple sources is that Kidd is sort of eyeing a move to the front office and hire someone else's head coach. Is that true?
I've heard that rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. I have heard that rumor. Wasn't he didn't he have a dual role before? He didn't have Milwaukee.
I think he had a bit of power, but he wasn't like never had. Say power, and I think what I've heard is like he wants to follow kind of the Brad Stevens path, that type of transition from the coaching from the bench to the front office, and then hire someone else.
Okay, yeah, I haven't talked to him about that, but no, I wouldn't. I've heard that,
and it seems like anything that would happen wouldn't be till next summer anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, but no, I haven't heard that. I couldn't confirm it or not.
Last thought on my mind is the Clippers, as bad as they are, obviously they don't have their own picks until 2030. Is there still any chance we see the Clippers as a team that decides to be sellers, get some type of assets for James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, even a Zubats?
To be honest, Kelsey, I don't know. So 15th is coming up. They have to, you know, Chris Paul, they have to, I think they will try to trade him. I don't know how easy that will be.
Who wants a 40-plus-year-old point guard at this point? It's like we talked about with Trey, different context. Not a lot of teams need a point guard.
Yeah. I don't know. It will be tough. You know, it sounds good trying to offload Kawhi, but even, you know, he wouldn't even be an easy transaction. So it's tough. I don't have a pulse on that right now.
I like the fact we basically have the same outfit on.
I was about to say, man, you must have saw me coming out the hotel, man, and you found that I was looking good. He's like, let me go say, man. You're looking all right, man.
Look at us.
You wearing it right, man. You wearing it right.
Chris, are you doing great stuff with Amazon Prime? You're on the association on NBA TV. Hey, how's the Amazon stuff going, man? You must be having fun with it, right?
Hey, man, that studio. Never seen anything like it. I've been in many TV studios, man. That is one hell of a setup, man. I'm impressed every time I go. The crew is great. Blake, Steve, UD, Nash. I mentioned Dirk.
Taylor.
You know, that's been my legend. That's been my colleague for a minute back in our TNT days. But it's, man, I'm having a ball, man. They're doing a really good job. I really think they have the best studio show. I think they have a unique blend of basketball analysis, and you know, they're entertaining. I think people are getting to see Dirk's personality a little bit more, and Blake has a quirky personality, and so I think it's a real good mix. So I'm proud to be a part of it,
and it's gonna keep growing. I mean, I think chemistry, like with any new show or whatever, it's like it's gonna keep getting better and better over time.
Nah, they're really good. I've been impressed, especially, you know, UD, Udonis Haslem, man. He's putting it down, man. I can see UD becoming a coach.
Oh, wow.
And be a head coach. Like, he's that intelligent about the X's and O's of this game. Like, I think people are going to, if they haven't been checking in already, they should definitely check it out. And I think they'll be impressed.
I mean, we see kind of the broadcaster to coach.
Yeah, we've seen that.
So who knows?
Broadcast, podcaster to the coach. Yeah, it's there. The pathway is there. It's
definitely there. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today,
I appreciate you, man. No problem.
Big thank you to Amin El Hassan and Chris Haynes for joining me on today's episode. Thanks to the entire crew here in Vegas for producing it. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music. Hope you have a good day. We'll be back again with more shows here from Vegas later in the week. Have a good one.